You bring your phone everywhere. Work, school, the movies. Now you can bring it to an Xfinity store for an easy way to switch to Xfinity Mobile, a new kind of network designed to save you money. You can get up to 5 lines of talk and text included with Xfinity Internet at no extra cost, so all you pay for is data. It's never been easier to switch to Xfinity Mobile and keep the phone you love. Click here to see how. Sorry, I gotta take this. Restrictions apply. Limited to select mobile phones. Requires activation of a new line of Xfinity Mobile. Up to 5 devices per account. New Xfinity Internet customers limited to up to 2 lines pending activation of Internet service.
Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
We're here.
Mostly.
Well, okay. I consider the fact that when I say we're here, at least our bodies are physically in sync with talking. Whether our
yes.
brains have synced up with our talking is another part.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes. So, considering that we are again coming to you from into the future from the past.
Right.
If people can figure that out, we're doing good. Our topic is ritual etiquette.
Yes. Ritual etiquette.
And since we all have done ritual, and whether we were etiquetted or not, if that's a word, how do you want to proceed, my dear? Do we want to start with just going about maybe our own personal experience and then talking about do's and don'ts, or coming in and just...
I don't know.
This enthusiasm is over the top. I know that, you know...
Well, let me first apologize. You're going to hear me cough probably throughout the show today, so sorry. I'll move my face away from the microphone, but I have a little bit of a tickle in my throat. I'm feeling a little bit off. I'm hoping it's just seasonal and wet. We've had weird weather. It's like 70 degrees, and then it's raining, and then it's freezing, and then it's snowing, and then it's 60 degrees.
Oh, and hailing, too.
Yeah, so... I don't
Californians
know if,
just get this
very
really
weird.
Weirded out.
Yeah, that might just be it. Or, you know, my kid's been sick this week, so I'm a little off today.
Well, hey.
But anyway, Elvira, ritual etiquette. I don't know. Maybe we start with, like, some things to consider before you go to a ritual.
Do I really want to go?
Oh, that's an excellent. That is freaking excellent.
That's obvious, but, I mean.
No, that's good.
You know. And if I want to go... What do I need to do to prepare?
Right.
Do I need to prepare anything?
Right.
And how, what am I going to expect to, especially if I've never gone?
Yeah.
What do I expect to see? What do I expect out of it for me? Lots of little, you know,
yeah.
sidebars.
I think going back to do I really want to go is an excellent question to ask yourself, because maybe you don't want to go because you're just not feeling it, or you want to finish binge watching whatever you're watching on Netflix. And, you know, and this can work for a private ritual or a public ritual, right?
Mm-hmm.
But is it that if you are feeling like you're not sure you want to go, is that because the ritual doesn't feel like it's right for you, or is it because you're just kind of in a funk, and the ritual would actually be really good for you.
Right.
That's an important thing to distinguish, because sometimes not going is because it's really what you need, and you're just feeling the discomfort of not really wanting to do that work right now. And
avoidance.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that was one of the things I wrote down, research before you go. If you are going to a public ritual or a private ritual for the first time and you've never been to a ritual with that group before, do some research beforehand. Mm-hmm. What is there information online about that tradition? Is there information about how they do rituals? Do they have contact information? So if you have questions, you can reach out to somebody
mm-hmm.
and have your questions answered. And some of the questions I might ask or suggest to ask if this is issues for you is, what is the situation with alcohol at this ritual? You know, some traditions are clean and sober.
Right.
Some
right.
will serve alcohol or allow for a wide range of mind-altering substances.
Mm-hmm.
You could come to a ritual high as a kite. Other traditions, no way, dude. So
right.
what is the drug and alcohol policy?
Mm-hmm.
Is there food going to be served at this ritual? Do I need to bring food to share to this ritual,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
What is the policy on children? Are there going to be kids here? Do the kids participate, or is there like a kids area where the
mm-hmm.
kids do something else?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the clothing situation?
Optional.
Yeah. Is clothing required? Do you have to wear a robe? Is it a sky-clad ritual? Is clothing optional? Blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But getting all of that ahead of time, so when you walk into the ritual, you're not like, oh, everyone's naked and drunk. This wasn't what I expected.
True.
Yeah.
A lot of the, and again, we're talking, there are so many preconceptions about what ritual is about in the pagan, the Wiccan, the witch community, and what people that may never have, you know, they're interested, but they've never kind of gone there,
right.
and all the PR in the movies and television and,
yeah.
you know, books and stuff that have been written about it. So obviously we are, you know, as a sect, we are basically put into a position where we have a lot of things that have already been written about things
yeah.
that may not even be true.
Right. And if you go to a public ritual, especially with public rituals, and you're like, wow, this is boring, this is weird, this is too out there for me, whatever, don't think that all witchcraft or pagan rituals are like that.
Mm-hmm.
Traditions are vastly different
right.
from very practiced and read liturgy
mm-hmm.
to totally made up in the spot without a plan at all. Like, it ranges wide and far.
Right.
So if you go to a specific ritual and it's just not, it's not working for you, it doesn't
mm-hmm.
feel appropriate for
mm-hmm.
how you are as a human,
mm-hmm.
don't give up. There are other traditions to explore.
Right.
You know.
Right. And obviously the things that we find that are more fluid, I mean, you know, the question I think is, what makes pagan ritual different?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of it is liturgical mm-hmm. in the sense of very similar to how more traditional structured rituals
yeah.
are.
Yeah.
So there is that. So it doesn't say that it totally precludes that, but just as Phoenix has said, it's what is the tradition?
Right.
And what do they do in that tradition?
Right.
It's not just like, I'm going to go to a wonderful Samhain ritual by this, I don't know, but they're a group, they're a witch group. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm going to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't do that, really. I mean, people do, but it
yeah.
would be wiser for you to kind of get a better idea. Otherwise, you're going to be flipping around like a fish out of water.
Yeah. And part of that is, you know, Facebook seems to be a place where a lot of events get posted nowadays, but you know, there are still people who put up flyers and post events on Witchbox or post events
mm-hmm.
in other online places that you can find. Read the event. What does the event say? What is the description of the event?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's going to be happening based on the instructions in the description of the event?
Right.
You know, a lot of times people show up to things with an expectation of what it's going to look like because they didn't actually read the provided description for the ritual.
And a lot of this, when you get to public ritual, when you get to private ritual, it's usually a more open-spaced coven. It's, you know, an open coven as opposed to you know, a closed coven.
Right.
And if you were in a closed coven, in a closed, you know, tradition, you're already going to know what to expect because they're training you for
right.
that.
Right.
But it's kind of like come and see who we are routine.
Yeah.
It also means that you kind of ask questions.
Yes.
That's really, really important about that, you know, so that you come with the understanding.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it can be very interesting.
Right. Yep. So, you know, be prepared. And I would also add, some traditions make a really big deal of being ritually bathed and cleansed
mm-hmm.
and arriving in that state.
Mm-hmm.
And other traditions don't give a shit. So
right.
what is your personal practice? Is it important to you to be ritually cleansed? Do you want to make sure you've taken a ritual bath before you go? This is for a public or private ritual.
Right.
With the private ritual, most of the time, in my experience anyway, someone's going to say, hey, we're doing this ritual. Please arrive cleansed and ready.
Right. Right.
But in a public ritual, that's usually not something that's specifically announced. So you have to make that decision for yourself. Is it important for you to do a ritual process before mm-hmm. going to the ritual?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a good idea. I mean, you know, take it seriously, even if it's something you've never done before, or something you're not sure about. Give yourself a nice spiritual cleanse before you leave to attend the ritual. Take a long spiritual bath or a shower or mm-hmm. sage yourself off or do something to get yourself into that mindset, because really what a cleanse before a ritual is to shake off the mundane and bring yourself to a place of honoring the sacred.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so what is it that triggers that for you in your mind that now I'm going into something sacred and I want to take it seriously, I want to honor that,
mm-hmm.
I want to do something for my mind, body, and spirit to sink into that space.
Right. Right.
You know, take it serious.
And, you know, a lot of times when I decide I'm going to go to a more public ritual, something that is out of maybe the group that I have done work with, and even when I do that, I focus on what my intention is for this particular ritual. What is it that I have as an intention to experience?
Right.
And then as I cleanse or as I prepare, sometimes I don't have the time because I'm in the middle of going out and this is, you know, I'm doing work and then I have to come home and
yeah.
or I don't come home and I have to find a place where I center.
Right.
And then once I do that, I kind of go, okay, now do I want to wear, you know, am I wearing the outfit I want? Do I need to add a little more jewelry? Do I, you know, I'm
yeah.
always into jewelry. You know, that kind of a thing. There's certain things that I only wear for going into ritual, whether
yeah.
it's public or private.
Right.
So these are all things that you as a novice would take into account and even as someone who's been around.
It yeah.
Remember, changing from public and worldly environment to a more sacred space.
Right. Yeah,
absolutely. So that's really important. Now, I know we can, you know, talk about what people can find. I mean, we can find it on the internet, what rituals, and we've talked about ritual in terms of that, but what the general idea is, there's some do's and don'ts
yeah.
that you need to consider within that concept of once you have decided and you think this is what I am and you've got yourself prepared, what happens when you get to
right.
a location.
Right. And we just talked about this before the show started about timeliness.
Yes.
Right? And the whole pagan standard time and the sort of funny joke about pagans are always late. Wah, wah. I find that really disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
Arrive on time. Like, it's just rude to be late, especially to, especially to a public ritual, but no, it's even worse to a private ritual. Like, just be on time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to a private ritual and you're running late and it's your coven, you can go, oh my God, I'm stuck in traffic. I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be there in 10 minutes. But with a public ritual, you know, I've planned many, many, many public rituals, and we always say we start at 7, but we never start at 7. We start at 7:15, 7:10,
mm-hmm.
and that's not because we're running late. It's because we know people are straggling in.
Right.
And the reason we wait is because in the welcome to the ritual, we give important and vital information for the participants to know
mm-hmm.
for how the rest of the ritual is going to
mm-hmm.
go. And if you're late, you're going to miss that.
Uh-huh.
And then when it gets to a point in the ritual where you need instruction, the instructions will already have been given, and you'll either be confused or frustrated or annoyed or not sure what's going on.
Uh-huh.
If you arrive on time, you avoid that. And I'll
right.
tell you, some traditions, which I actually really appreciate, some traditions say, arrive on time, the door is open until 7:15. At 7:15, we lock the door, and if you're late, you don't get in.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's amazing, because once you start the ritual, once you cast the circle, uh-huh. you don't want the door opening and closing. It breaks that
energy.
That energy. It
yep.
breaks the circle that you've created.
Uh-huh.
So arrive on time, especially if you've never been to that tradition's ritual before,
uh-huh.
and especially uh-huh. if it's something new for you, because
right.
you need to hear all the instructions.
Exactly. It's,
yeah.
it's really, really, really important, because I've been in several different groups, and the one that I find most annoying
yeah.
is when I get there and, you know, maybe there's a little socialization. Sometimes
yeah.
it's like meet and greet. And
yeah.
you have that time frame.
The potluck.
And sometimes they do it beforehand. But it's always, this is when we're going to start, you know. But when they kind of wander through it,
yeah.
you know, there's a part of me that thinks, is this how these people live their life?
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying that I personally have a rigid life.
Right.
By a long shot. But it is, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to be here. If I'm
right.
going to expect, just because we have clients. We have
yeah.
clients that call us,
yeah.
you know, and I got stuck and this and that. And the other thing, I came from a family that had a certain occupation that there was a responsibility you had.
Right.
Okay, if you were coming to that person for that particular situation, you have a responsibility. I have carried it over. Doesn't mean that I am always on time. Matter of fact, for the longest time, I wasn't. But since I have grown up, so to speak, I have come to understand that there is a certain point, and ritual
right.
is the same way. Going into ritual is the same way. Being there to prepare yourself, because you're shedding the external world to engage in a much more spiritual world. And I know that going to church and, you know, doing things, people come and go. I mean, I've been a member of the Church of Religious Science. I am actually a member of the Unitarian Universalist Church here in the Santa Rosa area. People come, there's only one time they keep the door shut
yeah.
and do not allow you to come in, is when they do their opening service ritual set intention time.
Yeah.
But they still allow people to come and go. So we're too used to that.
Right.
Because they're doing it in such a way that sacred space is mutable.
Right.
And that's not how they do it with regards to circle work and rituals as being that mutable. Yes, if you have to go to the bathroom or all of a sudden, you know, something's happening to your body and you need to, you know, get, that's a different matter.
Right, right, absolutely.
But,
yeah, and, you know, that's one of the other things that I wrote down about, that I wanted to make sure we talked about, was if you're in the ritual and all of a sudden you're like, you know what, I shouldn't be here.
Right.
This isn't working for me. Something's wrong. You know, check in. Is this because your boundaries are being pushed in a good way? Like, this is forcing you to look at some of your stuff. This is encouraging you to do some personal work.
Right.
This is, you know, opening you up to a larger experience. That's one thing.
Right.
You know, gauge your discomfort. Is this discomfort you need, or is this discomfort you don't need? And if you don't need it, if it's not right for you in the moment, then leave the ritual. That's
right.
totally okay. Just don't stand on the edge.
Right.
Don't go in and out. Don't be a spectator. It's also, I personally find it really upsetting when someone comes to a public ritual and sits in the corner and watches.
Right.
It's really awkward.
Right. And this is, and that's one of the, you know, their different do's and don'ts is
yeah.
do not be an observer.
Yeah.
You can stand in a circle. You can participate by just being there. You don't have to do anything else, but you are not there to observe
right.
how these people do their thing.
Right. Although I have had in public ritual, like students or people who are trying to learn come and say, hey, I would love to just observe this ritual. And, you know, the main tradition I plan public rituals for has been reclaiming, which is an ecstatic participatory mission. So, you know, the standard answer is, well, we're an ecstatic participatory tradition, but we also want you to participate to the level that you're comfortable with. But you're going to get a fuller experience if you're fully invested in that participation. You know, so there are ways to work with it. And if you're curious, if you're auditing, so to speak, the tradition to see, then talk to the people planning the ritual and let them know, like, hey, this is new for me. I'm not so sure. Is there a way for me to, you know, be half in and half out? And some people are going to be so okay with that, and some people are not.
But that's the, you know, again, that goes back to ask questions of the people that you're, you know, that are part, that are planning it, that are putting it on, so you have more understanding. Another one of those things is, well, part of going to a ritual, a lot of us, you know, we bring food, and the other, you know, you need to be aware, is everybody vegan? If it's, especially if it's more, it's a private ritual, is it, that are they gluten intolerant? You know, don't put peanuts in. You need to find out some of the do's and don'ts, and when you do do something, make sure that you have some way to define what's in there. If it is, like, I brought a peanut-based blah, so people might not go to that if they're peanut intolerant, but you can still bring it. So I think, you know, being aware of the etiquette of potluck food, et cetera, donations is important.
Oh, and that's a word that you just said that triggered something I had forgotten. Donations. Many times public rituals have a fee associated with them, and sometimes it's a scale, or, you know, no one turned away for lack of funds or blah, blah, blah. But keep in mind, putting on a public ritual isn't free for the people putting it on.
That's true.
You have to pay for the space. Even if that's an open park space, it's rare that you can gather in a public space without paying for a license or a permit or something. So there are expenses. There are often objects or items or ribbons or whatever that are brought to the ritual for the participants. Those have a cost associated with them. It's likely that all the priestesses, and I use priestess as a non-gendered term, anyone who's holding leadership in a ritual, in my opinion, is a priestess. But no doubt the priestesses are working for free. They're not getting paid. But it still costs money, so donate, you know. And I know a lot of traditions, when they earn more money than they need to put on the ritual, that rolls over to the next ritual, but they may fall short. Or, like I know specifically in the reclaiming tradition locally, if they've had a year of great surplus, they use that money to offer scholarships to classes or to camps. It's not like they're, you know, creating hordes of dragon piles of money. So be generous. This is a, most of the time, nonprofit organization, whether that's a legal nonprofit or just, you know, quietly nonprofit. You know, that are putting this on for your benefit. If you can afford to pay $20, pay $20, you know.
Which is, it's all for the benefit of what you're experiencing. Now, if it's at somebody's house, where it's a private ritual, that's a little different. You're not necessarily donating cash flow. You might maybe donate extra candles or, you know, incense or something if you want to as a gift. But it's it kind of varies a little when it goes private to public. But, you know, you have that. And speaking of that, in we're in California. So, obviously, we have now the legalization of recreational
marijuana.
And it basically, it's one of the things, though, you have to realize is that it's respectful for the people that are in the ritual, public or private, to determine if that particular, you know, of not smoking, not vaping, not doing any of this. That is, you know, just as important. And for me, unless, as of course you said, it is determined that that's part of the ambiance of what that ritual is about.
Right. You need to really have a clear understanding ahead of time. Like, again, to harp on reclaiming, because, you know, that's a big chunk of my experience. Reclaiming public rituals and public events are clean and sober.
Right.
So if you use marijuana as a medicine, and it's something you take every day, like you would an antidepressant or a anti-anxiety or heart medication, that's one thing. Take your medicine. But if you're using marijuana for recreation or you're drinking a glass of wine before you go to ritual, for a reclaiming ritual, that would be inappropriate. However, I also do rituals once a month for different goddesses, and I always serve alcohol. They're not reclaiming rituals. They're not clean and sober rituals. I always serve alcohol. So sometimes when people know me from reclaiming and they come to one of my goddess gatherings, they're surprised I serve alcohol. I'm not clean and sober, personally. My personal practice is not clean and sober. I use different mind-altering substances for different ritual purposes occasionally. But in reclaiming, when I'm doing public ritual, I honor the clean and sober.
Right.
You know, and it's better to go into a ritual clean and sober if you don't know.
Exactly.
Because enough mind-altering shit happens in ritual that if you're already altered, it could not
really
be a good experience.
Yeah, it could really be the one thing that makes it the worst experience.
Yeah.
So there is that, and obviously always, we've talked about animals and kids, but always ask.
Right.
You know, a lot of people now, everywhere you go, you have comfort companions.
Right.
And there is a certain amount of understanding of why.
Yeah.
But if somebody, if it's like we have a lot of people that may not be able to handle cat fur and dander and stuff, yes, you come with that on your clothes, but the animal isn't right there. You know, that kind of a thing. You have to, there's certain, especially in private rituals, there's certain more closeness.
Right.
Maybe they don't have their cats and dogs in the room and it's out there, but it would disturb them and get them agitated, whatever.
Well, and that's the thing, right? If you're going to someone's house for a private ritual and it's a new experience and you're allergic to cats and they've got 20 cats, that's something you might need to know ahead of time.
Right.
And my experience is most people who lead ritual say, this is a dog-friendly house, or we have cats. You know, people know ahead of time, but not always. That's going to be up to you to make sure you're taking care of your needs.
Exactly.
You know?
So, but it's really important. The other one is, and I find this interesting, and this is where I got into some real issues with one of the groups I was with, is you don't bring your cell phone in, you turn it off.
Yeah, turn your cell phone off. A lot of times, you know, that's in the welcome, the introduction to the public ritual, people will say, please turn off your cell phone. But even when that instruction is given, I can't even tell you how many times during an invocation somebody's phone starts.
Oh, yeah.
And it's embarrassing for the person whose phone is ringing.
Right.
And it's disruptive. So before you even walk in, put your phone on silent or leave it in the car.
Yeah. Because a lot of it is, and I mean, I have sat in churches.
Yeah.
Kid you not. These are the structured religions that are out there, and people, and this, they're in for their Sunday devotional, and phones ring. And it's not just one. No, and you're like, and everybody says the same thing, please silence your phone or turn it off.
What's really funny is when it's like a really loud or obnoxious like song that starts playing or something super inappropriate with cuss words or
I know, and there you are.
And it's all quiet and all of a sudden
everybody's just silent and then suddenly
yeah, you know,
it's
that
really
kind
funny. Of thing. But these are the real don'ts on the scale of that. The other thing is be mindful of the items on the altar.
Yes. Oh my God, that's so good. I totally forgot about that.
It's only because when I started doing this work and I started being involved, people would come up and want to grab a hold of my jewelry, you know, just look at it. And, you know, when you're out in the real world with nothing that has anything to do with that kind of thing, somebody comes up and they want to look at your fingers and you look at the rings and everything, you're like, oh, thank you, it's such a beautiful thing. I love having you take and look at it. And I'm, you know, there's a certain pride. But when it's ritual stuff, it's like, You know, I don't think so. So it's as much about what it is on your person as it is what is out there on the table or in the right directions, the quarters.
I would say generally, don't touch other people or their stuff without asking if it's okay.
That's true.
Don't touch, even out in the real world, don't touch people or their stuff without asking if it's okay. Just across the board.
Yeah.
Across the board. And to help with that, if you go into a public ritual and there's these beautiful altars and it seems like they're interactive, because sometimes altars are interactive,
right.
And the ritualists want you to do something at each altar or whatever.
Right.
And you're not sure.
Right.
Most rituals have someone sitting at the front door, or they have graces or wards or priestesses holding sort of that hostess type vibe. And so you can look for someone who seems like they're doing something, or they're at the front door, or they're cleansing people as they walk in and go, hey, I have a question. Who should I ask?
Mm-hmm.
Either they'll tell you who to go talk to, or they'll have the answer for you.
Right.
So if you're not sure, look around and see who seems to be like they're one of the people helping.
Right.
And go ask questions.
Right.
It's better to know for sure, like, is it okay to touch that word on the altar? It's so beautiful. Than just picking it up and having someone go, oh my God, why are you touching my sword?
Right.
You know?
Right. So there's, and when you're in sacred space, if you have to get out for whatever dynamic, please ask one of the individuals that are either the monitor, the wards, to cut you out of the circle. You can't just walk over. Now, I used to circle when I had my daughter and she was little, and we had, and it was more intimate. We had kids running in and out because we had two of them, and, you know, both the two people that were part of the group, myself and this other person. And we basically, when we circled, we basically made it acceptable for children and animals to cross in and out without disturbing the sacred space.
Which is pretty typical, especially with smaller private ritual.
Right.
Yeah.
But in public ritual, it's really important once that is cast that you do ask someone to be able to cut you out and open the door, and then when you come back in, if you're choosing to come back in, to have them do the same thing.
And if there isn't someone to do that, then you do that.
Yes.
You know, and it's easy to cut yourself in and out of a circle. There's a few ways to do it. You can use your hands like a knife and cut a slit in the circle and open that up a little bit, walk through, turn around and seal that up.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can separate it like it's curtain and walk through and then seal it back up. But basically make a hole in the sacred space that's been created, turn around and close the hole that you've created.
Right.
And, you know, I've watched this happen in public ritual many times where people, like, need to go in and out. I'll tell you a secret. most of the time, in public ritual, the ritualists will include the bathrooms in sacred space. So if you're in a little hall and the bathrooms are outside the hall, you're probably safe to go in and out of the bathroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to, like, I've seen people cut the circle, like, they're standing in the circle and they cut it right there.
Yeah.
It's bigger than that.
Right.
It's usually bigger than that.
Right, right.
But trust your instincts. It's better to do it, you know, too small than not at all.
Right.
And feel for it. And not everybody can, so don't feel bad if you can't. Sometimes I can and sometimes I can't. So don't feel bad if you don't feel the boundary.
Right.
But feel for the boundary. You know, walk towards the edge of the space, walk towards the edge of the building, walk towards the edge of the parking lot, whatever, and see if you can feel where that boundary is, and then cut yourself in and out when you can sense the boundary.
Right.
If you can. Don't feel bad if you can.
And, yeah, because there are days it's kind of like when I do yoga and they say, well, you know, you're going to do this balancing thing and you're going to do it on your right foot. And then you do it and then you go to your left foot. And, you know, they will either say, and I will laughingly know because one side is better than the other, you know. And they say, well, don't worry about it because sometimes, you know, one side is better balanced than the other. Sometimes you're not able to do it because of cold or whatever. So it's the same thing in feeling energy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we don't have that. It's interesting if it's a private house or a private environment, respect the areas in that place that are not open to everyone walking in and out.
Yeah.
So, you know, respect the privacy of the other areas of the house. that are not included in the ritual.
Right.
That's very important. I've never really, quite frankly, when I do private ritual, I've never had the concern that that was it. But, you know, if you're a first-timer, please be respectful.
Yeah. People tend to be a little bit more cautious about who they're inviting into their home.
Right.
It's a private ritual, but still be respectful. This is someone's private space, you know. Should we take a break and come back and talk more?
Definitely.
Okay, we'll be back.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays, 5 to 6, Fit and Foxy, Madame Nadia and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays, 6 to 7, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays, 6 to 7. All times Pacific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
And we are back with, I guess, ritual etiquette. I think that's where we're at today. So, other than, you know, the standard things about do's and don'ts, one of the things I would like to say is please, please do not preach your own religious beliefs at anyone.
Yeah.
Be respectful. If you want to have a conversation about your state of consciousness and where you come from, do so after the ritual is closed and you're at whatever it is, the ending process.
There's usually a lot of space after ritual to socialize and chat and talk. And, you know, one of the things I wrote down is don't be disruptive, don't interrupt. Like, if something is happening that goes against your personal levels and your beliefs, and you can't abide by it anymore, then leave the ritual. But don't interrupt the ritualists.
Right.
Don't. There is nothing I hate more in a ritual, and priestesses do this too sometimes. You know,
you
depending on the tradition.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, I'm going to step in and do the invocation for air. I've been invited to do this invocation, and I step in and I make it about me.
Mm-hmm.
I make it about my personal political beliefs. I make it about being vegan. I make it about money. I make it about something that has nothing to do with the goddamn ritual. Nothing makes me more mad than that. Derailing the ritual is so freaking rude. So if you've been invited to hold a ritual role,
right,
and something about the ritual doesn't vibe with your personal beliefs, then decline the ritual role.
Right.
But don't derail the ritual for your own purposes.
This isn't the Oscars.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Don't go to the ritual. Like, it's just, and don't interrupt. If the priestess is saying something and you're like, right on, sister, that's one thing. But if someone's going on or offering something or doing an invocation and you're not feeling it, to go, this is dumb, don't do that.
We're not in a interactive performance environment, okay? So, because there is the concept that, yes, we are in sacred space. And that also brings the second part of it, both in and out of ritual.
Yeah.
Do not take pictures.
Or videos. Yeah.
Because the one thing that we seem to forget in this wonderful day of age of so much interactive
social media. Yeah.
Is if you take something and say, I was at this really great video, this thing, and I post the video, and somebody is not out
as the groom closet.
Out of the groom closet.
Yep.
You have just called it outed, and that's really very dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, and Elvira, we live in a very progressive part of the world where if someone finds out you're a witch or a pagan or a Wiccan, for the most part, people are going to go,
Yeah.
You know, there are some folks where we live that are going to react oddly or weirdly or badly. But there are other parts of the United States, there are other parts of California,
yes,
where you could have some really negative repercussions if you were out and about your spiritual beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And outing someone once upon a time was punishable by being banished from the community.
Right.
It's just poor practice. And so, don't take videos, don't take photographs, unless you have explicit permission.
Exactly.
And that means I'm going to take a picture of this beautiful earth altar because it's so gorgeous, and I want to remember this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Ask permission of the ritualists or the priestesses.
Right.
And make sure that no participants are in the photo accidentally.
Right.
If the ritualists say, please take pictures of our altars and post them online and put hashtag this ritual is awesome or whatever.
Right.
Great. But if you accidentally post one of those pictures and Susie Q is in the picture and Susie Q's not out, you've just outed her online. You can't do that.
And
you got to be cautious.
Yes. Because we are in a very open environment in Sonoma County,
right.
California.
Right.
But even in other areas of California, you don't spend that much time. You know, some of the areas you don't. They're very, very conservative.
Yeah.
I know that's hard for the rest of the United States to believe, but truthfully, it is. But this is all very important because if you say, do you mind if I take a picture of your beautiful outfit and
yeah.
really love it, and the person says yes, they are, and you said, and you please, I think, even though they know in the day and age we're in, remind them, I want to post this on
right.
my Facebook.
Is this okay for me to put online?
Is it okay for me to put online, you know, to that? Then you have given the integrity of, the integrity of this person's privacy.
Right. And, I mean, literally, take this seriously. Because I don't care. I don't care if I have a photo of me online and someone goes, check out this witch. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out enough in my entire life that that's just like, okay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who could lose their jobs.
Right.
There are people who might be in custody battles and could lose their children.
Right.
You know, technically religious discrimination is against the law. However, that doesn't mean it doesn't happen.
Right.
It doesn't mean that it still couldn't be a potential issue.
Exactly.
So just be very cautious.
Mm-hmm.
Be very cautious. And it's better to just not. You know, and we've had people in reclaiming rituals, public rituals, take videos thinking, oh, like we do a maypole at Beltane every year. And people are like, this is so beautiful. I'm going to take a video of this. And we have to go and ask them to delete the video and make sure that they deleted it off of their phone. And it puts the ritualist in an uncomfortable position.
Right.
Yeah, it's beautiful and it's fun and it's silly and it's playful and it's there's a beautiful song being sung. But that's for that moment. That's not for
posterity.
Yeah.
You know, and it is, okay, you go to church, you go to a Catholic mass.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, I don't know, sometimes there's always the off person. Nobody's filming that.
Right.
Nobody's got their camera and their little phone and doing the mass. There's
right.
the people that attend these ceremonies, these rituals, these places, it's sacred.
Yeah.
Treat what we do
yeah.
in the same manner.
Absolutely.
Period, whether it's in a grove, a house, a living room,
yeah.
A public
hall.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's yeah. That's one of those that I get,
yeah. yeah,
you know, that kind of thing. Because it also harkens back to a time when, as you say, they were ostracized
yeah.
because we would all get killed.
Right, it was life and death, literally.
You know,
yeah.
And it doesn't mean that we fear that at this time. But it's a different kind of life and death that we have. It's not our physical bodies.
I mean, let's be real, okay? I am a grounded human. I am super woo and out there and odd and strange
mm-hmm.
in the mainstream society.
Mm-hmm.
However, I also know what the deal is in mainstream society, and I know how to play nice with the neighbors, and I
right.
know when it's appropriate to button down a little bit and
mm-hmm.
go a little bit more mainstream because I want to go along to get along. I'm not
right.
trying to light my neighborhood on fire. I want to get along with my neighbors. You know, so it's not like I'm dressing like a conservative Republican Christian woman. I
right.
dress like a weird hippie. I'm okay with all of that. But we also have to we have a public image, and especially because I am so out of the broom closet, I'm very aware that people might look at me or talk to me and make assumptions about all of witchcraft and paganism based on their interaction with me. And so I try to come across to mundane folks, to muggles, as level-headed and normal.
Oh, my.
And easy to talk to and reasonable. You know? And I get that not every freaking pagan, I know that that probably just annoys the shit out of a few of you that are listening right now. Like, no, everything should be an act of anarchy.
Right.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I want people who are outside of witchcraft. We're a minority.
Yeah.
We are a very tiny, tiny, tiny minority. And the more people who get to know us and go, oh, they're not weird. They're not eating babies. They're not sacrificing goats. They're just, they love the earth. Like, right, okay, I want more of that. I want more acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I try to play nice out in the public world.
Right.
And so that's something to remember. Not everyone can play nice out in the public world. So keep these things quiet and private. What is one of the precepts of witchcraft? To keep silent.
Right. And that's more than one thing to do. It's a precept. It's a way of making things viable and happen.
Right.
But you have the other side of it. And it's interesting because one of the things that I was looking at in some of the notes I took is shut up and listen.
Yeah.
You know, listen to what's going on in the ritual and the energy. If you're quiet, you can feel the energy.
Yeah.
You'll be able to have a better chance of that.
Yeah.
And it's the actual experience in the ritual that you're really looking for.
Yeah.
I mean, the words and everything are beautiful, the tools and everything. And I think we've talked about this in other shows when we talked about tools and other parts of ritual and things, is that it's that, but it's the experience, and you have to be quiet and listen while others are doing the work of creating, because that's, to me, what a ritual is, whether I do it myself or I do it in a group.
Right. And it's easy for, like, as a new young practitioner, and I mean young, like, in the practice, not necessarily in age, ritual, any public ritual I went to, was so captivating and beautiful and amazing, and every moment there was something that left me awe, or like, oh, I found my place, I found my people, and now that it's almost 30 years later, I'm jaded, and there are times where I'm like, ugh, this is stupid, ugh, this isn't working for me, ugh, that priestess stepped in too early or too late, or like, I have a critic's eye now when I go to ritual, and I try really hard to go in with beginner's mind. Like, this has been my work for the last year, to attend ritual without the critic's voice and just be in it. And it's hard.
Yes, it is.
But it is so much more joyful to be blown away by something spectacular and feel the shift in energy and allow mistakes to happen and see the beauty in those mistakes.
Yes.
It becomes hard. Like, the hard part about experience is that you have experience.
Exactly.
And you know when it goes sideways.
Yes.
Right? But enjoy that. There's a reason it went sideways.
And it, you know, there's all these little, you know, notes I've taken, you know, be courteous and supportive, fulfill your commitments, support the leaders, the leaders routine, and stay focused. There are reasons why these are so important. They're statements, but they're not, you're supposed to sit there and tick them off in your brain that I'm doing this. As Phoenix has said, it's beginner's mind. It's listening. It's fully engaging. And my Hawaiian teacher and mentor, be present and just be.
Yeah.
We talk about, well, we're three steps ahead, we're listening to that, we're doing this in our daily life. When we walk into sacred space, to be is the biggest thing.
Absolutely.
And that's what these rituals and what even talking about ritual etiquette is that it suddenly becomes your personal experience.
And with a public ritual, you don't know the experience of the priestesses. For example, I went to a ritual at PantheaCon last year, 2017. It was an Artemis ritual, and the woman who organized it and put it together and led it was her first time doing something on this level. And she did the introduction to the ritual, and she said, this is my first time, and I'm really nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And that honesty, I was like, oh, I want this to be a good experience for her.
Mm-hmm.
I want this to be a beautiful ritual for her so mm-hmm. she has a positive experience
mm-hmm.
in stepping into leadership.
Mm-hmm.
We have to support people stepping into leadership.
Right.
And so as a participant, you don't know if that person doing an invocation, if this is their first time. Imagine stepping into a ritual with 100 people watching you, expecting something fucking epic to happen, and it's your first time.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary.
Of course it is.
You want people to have a positive experience, so support. Be supportive.
Right.
Supportive.
Right. And that's really, really important because, yes, by you doing that, you open the door for you to have the experience support you.
Yeah.
It's an open door policy.
Yeah.
And it's really important. I know for me, it's been hard at times to go in.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing this a long time. I have a certain age bracket I'm in. I look at everything and I kind of, want to see the newness, but also because I've seen all the other, there's a jadedness.
Absolutely.
So it's really important for me to really step into the no mind, just listening, feeling, and experiencing.
Yeah.
And if there's anything I have learned over the time, it's that's the best. That is like the core of any ritual. And when we say etiquette, the etiquette is also with yourself.
Right.
It's very, very important about that. Also, speaking of, nothing in particular and throwing it off to the other side, if there is something that you need before the ritual that you want out of the ritual, like healing, then it's very important to find the high priestess or the people that are the leaders and ask.
Right. Is this appropriate?
Is this appropriate?
Yeah.
Because a lot of us go in and, oh, my God, we really are having an emotionally difficult, time. We lost our dog. We lost this. We lost the other thing. We're, and we really need certain things and to feed us, to help us. And it's not just that I'm here to get this, but then also it's, is there any part of this ritual that can actually address this?
Right. If I'm going to a Beltane ritual where we're celebrating the high mark of spring and dance in April,
mm-hmm.
but I need to process the grief of my father passing away, that might not be the appropriate ritual to process that grief, right?
Right.
So also be okay with someone saying, that's actually not appropriate for this ritual.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Honor the fact that you may have to take your shoes off.
Yeah.
There's certain things about sacred ground. In the Catholic and the Jewish traditions, they don't take their shoes off. You go into the Islamic, they take their shoes off.
So do
the Hindus.
Yep.
There is a really important way of knowing, watching.
Yep.
A lot of people, especially even in private places, their private homes and everything, it's that you take your shoes off. You walk with that energy of not bringing in the commonplace outside world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are certain, key things of observation, also asking, big thing.
The thing I want to make sure we say or talk about is
mm-hmm.
if there is a song, sing it.
Yes.
If there is a chant, chant along. If there's a dance, do the damn dance to the best of your physical ability. Participate in the ritual.
Right.
If they say, hello and welcome to the ritual, we're going to sing this song and I'm going to teach it to you now. And when we get to the song, we're all going to sing together. If you hold back, you're holding back a piece of what the ritual needs. You're holding
uh-huh.
back the energy of making it a successful ritual.
Uh-huh.
Does singing in front of other people make you uncomfortable? Good.
Uh-huh.
Do it anyway.
Uh-huh.
Push that edge. That's an edge that you can work with.
Right.
Singing, everyone else is singing. And trust me, if Starhawk can teach a song and lead a song when she can't carry a tune in a bucket,
mm-hmm.
you can do it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You can do it.
Yep.
So participate. And if you recognize, singing and dancing and chanting, this is not the tradition that I want to be in, then you've learned something and you don't go to another public ritual.
Right.
But don't sit in the corner with your arms crossed and be like, oh, this is stupid.
Right.
That's so disrespectful. And, again, reclaiming, ecstatic tradition, there's always singing, there's always music, there's always some amount of movement. And in the charge of the goddess, she says, mirth and reverence.
Right.
Know when to be silly, know when to be serious, and know that sometimes those things overlap and cross over.
Mirth Exactly.
Reverence.
And we talk about, and I'm not doing a comparison about bad or good,
yeah.
but because I have participated in more structured religions, they get up, they speak hymns, they
yes.
speak hymn responses. When
yes.
you say something, the other person says something, the leader. The same thing happens in these rituals,
yes.
the call response process, movement, what is going clockwise and counterclockwise, and that's the more commonplace, dorsal and Wittershims.
Yeah.
These are all things that are part of the rituals that go, whether they actively do it in one or they do it only, you know, at a certain time.
Yeah.
It's there are certain things you are in the moment,
yes,
but you also do know that these are part of what you're doing.
And no one understands more than me how singing in front of other people is scary.
Yeah.
It was one of my biggest fears in reclaiming. Like, my very first ritual that I went to when I was 17, we were supposed to sing our name into the circle, and I was terrified. And I did it, but I never wanted to experience that again. And then as I got, like, when I would plan private rituals, I never included singing. We might do a chant or a poem or, you know, something that rhymed or whatever.
Right.
There was
right.
never singing. And then as I got more involved in reclaiming, I recognized that singing in front of people was an edge I actually wanted to push.
Mm-hmm.
And so in one ritual, it was a summer solstice ritual, I volunteered to teach the song.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shaking beforehand. I was so nervous. I was mm-hmm. terrified, and I did it anyway because I wanted to get over that.
Mm-hmm.
And now I teach songs all the time. I've taught songs. I've sang at the Spiral Dance in front of 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
I broke that boundary.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with it now. And I don't even give a shit if I sound good or not. I'm just going to sing because I like the feeling of singing.
Right.
So if you notice in a public ritual that you're feeling some resistance, what is that resistance coming from? And is that a boundary that you want to push?
Right.
Push it. Grow as a human being. That's why we're witches and pagans,
mm-hmm.
to grow and be better people.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly, because obviously all of these things are part of being in the ritual,
yeah.
participating,
yeah.
because it's a joint effort. It's like when we go to a football game.
Yes.
We may not be playing that exact game out there, so like we're not watching the high priestess and the high priest doing the things or calling the responses, but we're cheering the team on and we're getting excited and we boo and we hiss and that energy participation is the same process,
yep.
channeled differently.
Yep.
In rituals.
If you go to a public ritual and one of the things that is going to happen is raising a cone of power, raising energy,
mm-hmm.
that requires your interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And often, you know, a spiral dance will happen in a public
mm-hmm.
ritual because it's a really easy way to get people in and moving and
right.
seeing and invested, right? But at some point, everyone is facing inward. And there's a song or a tone or a chant. People are dancing or moving or waving their arms.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look around and you see the other people and what they're doing and you can copy that, or if you see someone doing a movement with their arm and you want to do that movement too, all of that buy-in from the participants
mm-hmm.
makes the energy stronger.
Right.
It makes the cone go up faster. It makes everything much more
mm-hmm.
powerful if everyone in that room is invested in making it happen.
Right.
Participation. Oh, my God.
Participate.
Yeah, it's important.
It really is. One itty-bitty sidebar of
yeah.
more normal things. If it's outside and you need to apply mosquito or a bug repellent, if
yeah.
you're doing things outside, please be sure to do that before you do the go into circle.
Yeah.
And again, try to remember if it's fragrance free, et cetera,
right.
that kind of a thing.
And it's a good idea to just not overdo it with the oils and the perfumes
yeah.
and the, you know, if it's a private ritual and that's part of it, the adornment and that sensualness of
mm-hmm.
scent, great. But in a public ritual, you're probably not going to be doing some crazy sensual sense-based adornment.
Right. Right.
And there could be someone who has a huge trigger to a scent you're wearing. So just don't.
Mm-hmm.
Save that for your private ritual.
Right. They're just, you know, some of these things are they're logical. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to go out and I'm going to go hike. What do you do before you hike?
Right.
You know, you think of the things you need to do. So if it's indoors, you have one thing. You have to be careful of scents and the things that are there. If it's outdoors, then you need to consider, you know, when sidebar before we obviously are going to need to eventually get ourselves closed here, is that when I went to Hawaii with my fiance, where we were going to get married, and I had my kids and he had his kids, and we were there. The place we did it was in a taro patch, and it was a old temple site, and the kahuna and we had the kahuna, and then we had to have a Unitarian Universalist minister because they had to sign the certificate.
Sure, sure.
So we go out there. Did I think at dawn, because we had to do this before dawn, that I needed to put on bug repellent? No.
Right.
And a lot of us didn't. So we went through the process and came back with giant mosquito paint. And, I mean, it was a beautiful experience.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I was told is go jump in the ocean because the salt water did that.
Okay.
But it was very funny because that was a ritual.
Yes.
And it was done in this situation, and I didn't think.
Right.
So ever since that moment, it has brought home more of what it is that I need to consider when I'm going somewhere.
Yep.
That may require preparation
personal
preparation.
That's right.
That's not religious or spiritual.
That's right. Yeah.
So,
getting ready.
Right. All right. Well,
next week is our Ask a Witch segment.
Oh, goody.
So you'll have a couple more days to send in questions if you want us to talk about a specific topic, if you'd like to have a reading on a situation, if, you know, there's something you want to ask about our personal lives.
Within context.
Go to witchpriestesscauldron.com, and there's a little questionnaire to fill out with your name and email and the question that you have.
Sounds good.
And you might make it on the show next.
Ta-da! All right. Well,
okay.
Have a wonderful week. Goodbye.
Listening.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
Easter's coming. That means friends and family, Easter egg hunting, and a delicious holiday meal. Whether you need 2 dozen eggs or 12 dozen, Smart & Final has the perfect pack. So hop in for a bigger selection of decorations, candy, baskets, and ham, with prices up to 25% lower than supermarkets. Now, 28-pack half-liter First Street water, $1.96 plus CRV limit 4, and mangoes are 2 for $1 limit 12. Come in or visit smartandfinal.com for quick delivery. Smart & Final.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.